What's up, everyone? The Pro Football Weekly Podcast is back, previewing the Week 8 slate with my co-host Eric Edholm. I am Arthur Arkish, and Eric, let's launch right in. Well, first of all, what's going on? How was your trip to Foxborough last week?
You got to
take in the Fog Bowl, right?
Thank you. It was funny.
Fog Bowl 2.0, if
you will. Fog Bowl 2.0, right? Of course, Chicago hosted that Eagles playoff game years ago. Right. And I was actually in Chicago that day. We happened to be like leaving my grandparents' house and driving up to Milwaukee. So I remember that game very well. It was funny on the way down to Foxborough because it was a gorgeous day. I mean, it looked like just a perfect fall day for football. There was no rain in the forecast, nothing. And then, yeah, like, all of a sudden, I thought, were they shooting off fireworks? Is there, you know, what's going on? Then I realized, oh, this is just some weird fog settling in. So you guys watching on TV had probably a better view than I did. I was watching the monitor. I mean, I was watching the TV monitor to see what was going on pretty much the whole third quarter.
You had a good piece off of that game. You know, the Patriots earn another victory and pretty impressive doing so, but maybe more of the story or the one you wrote. The fog can't seem to be lifted from this Falcons offense under Steve Sarkisian. What's going on? I hear some Patriots DBs actually saying maybe there's some predictable elements of that Falcons offense at the moment.
Yeah, and I guess it's not shocking to people who watch the Falcons because they feel like the same thing. And I know what's coming here. They're going to go play action. They're going to try to go up to... And when you look at the raw numbers, you see that they're throwing to Julio about the same percentage they were last year. They're throwing to the running backs about the same percentage. They're using roughly the same formations and personnel packages and all that. You know, everything looks the same until the snap happens, right? And Matt Ryan's overthrowing some balls. You know, the running backs aren't seeing the same creases. Julio has been seeing a little tricked up coverage, but, you know, Sanu hasn't had the same production. He dropped a pass in that game Sunday. So some of the blame for sure, I think, has to go on Sarkisian. Everyone's going to call out that fourth down jet sweep. That seemed like a crazy idea at the time when you're that close. But I think some of the onus has to be on the players, too. And Alex Mack didn't exactly say it, but he kind of hinted that, you know, it's going to take some time. It's a different play caller. They're using the same system, but, you know, you always have to adjust. And they left some plays out there. And you're right. Malcolm Butler said, we kind of knew formationally and situationally what was coming in a lot of situations. That doesn't make it any easier. So break some trends, you know, and just kind of mix it up a little against the Jets this week.
That the Patriots defense did that without both Eric Rowe and Stephon Gilmore, and the Falcons weren't able to take advantage, made it kind of even more stunning. Does Atlanta get right? I don't think we'll spend a ton of time on the Jets-Falcons, but I would imagine this would be an opportunity for Atlanta to try and to snap out of it a little bit. Or I mean, the Jets have played teams pretty tough of late as well, although they've lost two in a row now.
Yeah. I mean, a couple rookie safeties who played well. I know the Patriots took advantage of them in that game a couple weeks back. But it's funny. I'm not a betting guy, but it's hard not to notice. There seems to be some handicapping sentiment towards the Jets in this one. That maybe they think the Falcons' struggles continue. And that would be, what, 4 in a row they've lost? So if they lose that game. So
right.
A little bit surprising. This is a big test for Matt Ryan. He was the MVP a year ago. Some of the early interceptions, not his fault.
Right.
Lately, though, I can't say he's played exceptionally well.
He didn't play well in the first year under Kyle Shanahan either.
Correct.
So I know Atlanta must be hoping, they hope this won't last all year, but
right.
The year one to year two, you know, transformation under Shanahan obviously led to an MVP award and one of the best offenses in NFL history.
What were their issues? Red zone, third down, situational. I mean, it was like the same deal. But you're right. It was, you know, they got shut out late in the season against Carolina that year. I know it was a great team, but still, it was you can't fire Sark yet. Let this thing play out a little. It'll take some time.
Let's go to the Steelers next. Pittsburgh at 5-2 atop the AFC North and heading into Detroit off the bye at 3-3, and certainly the Lions kind of limped into that bye. Pittsburgh, nothing if not distractions coming out of the building each week, and yet they're now playing, they're finding themselves, and they look like one of the best teams in the NFL. But can you tell listeners a little bit about Martavis Bryant and what we should expect next?
Oh, I don't know. I'm trying to predict the future. I was more excited about the Juju Smith-Schuster bike angle, but that seems to have been solved. He found his bike. Will Martavis find his mode of transportation? All signs point to him being inactive. They have a bye after this, so it's like, you know, do they just sort of leave him inactive? Treat him like Keyshawn Johnson with the Bucks years ago and just sort of put him to the side? He's not the same player Keyshawn is, but he's a big play guy and he just hasn't been there this season. So I'm excited about the special teams and the defense of the Steelers. For years has been, you know, criticized. They've picked up the slack. Maybe the offense can follow suit. And I know you know this Lions team well, and I guess my question is, did they solve some of their issues on the bye week, or are we still going to see poor blocking and some plays allowed on defense? And I don't know.
Yeah, unless Taylor Decker's coming back, and I don't think he is
yet.
I believe he's eligible to begin practicing, but it doesn't seem like he'll be ready for this one. Golden Tate's not going to be ready for this one. I'm not the biggest Golden Tate fan, but his role in that offense is critical when you look at what else they have or what they don't have. So, I don't know. I don't think things are looking too great for Detroit, but who knows? This seems to be when Jim Caldwell does his best work, when kind of everyone thinks they don't have a chance.
Run the football. I know it's not their strength necessarily, but like the teams have beaten the Steelers, Jaguars, Bears, teams have had success against them. They ran it. Yep. Now, I know Kareem Hunt got erased early in that game against Pittsburgh, but you at least have to show some semblance of a run game, I think, against the Steelers.
Yeah, no doubt. Maybe an Ameer Abdullah opportunity, and you're right. Whether it was Leonard Fournette or Jordan Howard, of course, both teams that have beaten the Steelers did it on the ground. So we won't talk to you guys again before the trade deadline, which I believe is October 31st on Halloween this year. So I just Martavis Bryant, I'm going to say I've went back and forth on this, and now I'm not wondering if he hasn't just killed his value to any other teams who may have been interested. But if you had to just guess, is Martavis Bryant still a Steeler come next week? I think he said he may get the Keyshawn treatment, so that means yes.
I'm going to say there's about a 98% chance. Based on what Mike Tomlin said, I've tried to call there and haven't got much luck as far as behind-the-scenes information. But, Tomlin made it seem like, no, we're keeping him. We've developed him. We stuck by him during the suspension.
Right.
We're holding on to him and giving him the opportunity to play on the scout team, to show that he cares, to recommit to his teammates because he hasn't done that to date. So I suspect they are not going to trade unless some team blows him away, which I just don't see happening.
It seems like there's a little bit of a disconnect, as you just said, on the practice field and when he's around his teammates, he seems like a decent guy. And then when he gets to social media is when he doesn't really seem to have a filter, and that hasn't really helped his cause the past couple
of
weeks.
That's what they told me. Someone in the media asked him, why were you suspended? He said, social media. It's just funny. That's his answer, right? Okay, well, there you go.
Pretty funny stuff. What about the 3-4 Chargers, Eric? Heading into Foxborough, where you just left, and the Patriots suddenly lost the heart and soul of their defense, Dante Hightower, for the year to a torn pectoral muscle.
Huge loss, and it was a year ago, different situation, but it was a year ago that the Patriots traded Jamie Collins in a shocking move.
Right.
Maybe the two or three games prior he hadn't played well, but he kind of was the best player on that defense at that point, so that was a stunner. Well, this is obviously a stunner in a different way. If there's a team that obviously knows how to find solutions in the darkest of times, well, they're it. But, Kyle Van Noy had a great game the other night. I don't know that there's some guy lurking on the roster now. David Harris also played really well in that game on limited, snaps. He was out there, started the game, sniffed out a couple screens. I mean, he looked like he was playing well. But David Harris doesn't play the Dante Hightower role. He's just a linebacker. They have the same position. I wonder, and Melvin Gordon moves around well. Hunter Henry's one of the emerging tight ends in the league, and they just, I think they might be able to manipulate him a little bit.
Yeah, it could be a tough spot, and obviously the Chargers just pitched a shutout of Denver and now seem to be gaining a little bit of momentum as well. So that could be an interesting matchup. It'll be fun to watch Phillip Rivers and Tom Brady go at it a little bit. What about Bosa and Ingram? And New England protected Brady pretty well last week, I think, but it was 2 weeks ago in Tampa. He got beat up pretty good.
Yep.
That's got to be at the top of Bill Belichick's mind this week, I'm quite sure.
What, do they have 20 sacks between them or something like that? It's crazy.
A number of teams, I believe.
Right, those two alone, I think, and some of the interior guys, Phelan and Legit, are playing pretty well too. And so they're getting enough of an interior presence that those guys can't be double teamed on every play. So that's a big concern. Nate Solder, the left tackle for the Patriots, the news came out that his child is going through chemotherapy. It's obviously awful. We're both parents. Anyone with a heart can relate to that. So he has struggled at times. Early in that game, he gave up some pressures, had a penalty. The interior of the Patriots line, I think, has played pretty well. It's been the tackle spots that have been the biggest issue. So you know, they don't have a lot of tight ends. Their backs may have to chip in as well, and just slowing those two down is going to be tough.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting matchup to watch. Raiders and Bills. Bills 4-2, and you know, found a way to get it done with offense last week in Tampa Bay coming to town. And boy, Oakland found some offense too. And what a gutty performance from Derek Carr. It feels like forever ago. I know last Thursday night, right, and the big win over the Chiefs. But do you think Oakland found some solutions that are sustainable to help them get back in this thing?
Maybe, right. And for Carr to do it on short rest like that, right, just would not be denied at the end, and penalties and all those crazy plays. That was exceptional, and that's why they paid him the money. Now Tyrod Taylor's trying to get that next contract too,
right,
and he's come up with big plays. We saw kind of the best and the worst of Tyrod last
week.
Seems
like we do every game.
Yeah, the Tyrod experience every single game, it seems like. What I've said about Sean McDermott is that he doesn't seem like the best coach on game day, but he prepares his team exceptionally well. And a lot of what Andy Reid has been criticized of being and praised for being. Whereas Jack Del Rio at times has been a pretty good game manager. He's made some bold decisions during the game, maybe not as much this season. So that's an interesting matchup. But it's in Buffalo. I wouldn't be shocked if the Raiders kind of limp in a little, no Marshawn. I don't know. I just kind of feel like the Bills may sneak away with a win in this one.
Yeah, it wouldn't stun me either. It's a tough cross-country trip, of course. It's what Oakland did so well last season, going on the road and pulling these games off. But they haven't looked the same. So, I don't sense that same magic from this Raiders group. And now, all that being said, the Bills will be without not only Jordan Poyer but E.J. Gaines. So half of that secondary is going to be down. And we just mentioned how good Derek Carr was. The numbers, I mean, through for over 400 yards and I think three or four touchdowns, pretty amazing. But even the 29-52 wasn't totally reflective of his outing, because there were some drops, and then when the game was on the line, he was just perfect. I mean, whether it was that the rollout to Crabtree for the game winner or any of the other three game winners we thought we saw, man, he was precise when it mattered the most. So certainly some encouraging signs, at least from Oakland, and we'll see if they can build on them. What else looks good on this slate here, Eric? I guess the Bears going into New Orleans is now fascinating. New Orleans is hot as any team in football, and the Bears aren't used to being this hot anyway after consecutive wins. Kind of an interesting matchup here. Ryan Pace returns home, and Akeem Hicks faces his old team. Akeem Hicks has been probably as good as any interior lineman in the league, not named Aaron Donald.
Pro Bowl. He's been a Pro Bowl defensive lineman this year, and I think we always knew he was a good player, but, you know, the Saints gave up on him in a trade, not getting much back. The Patriots refused to pay him, a $500,000 difference, you know. And I think he even hinted he would have taken a little less, but it was just too much of a gap. Bears went out and got him, and they got a tremendous player. So that's going to be fun. And who would have thought even 2-3 weeks ago that we would have called this a battle of two playmaking defenses? That's the exciting. And I know you and Hub talked about it on the Bears podcast too, but this is what's cool about it. And the two-headed running back thing, so – you know, outside of comparing Breeze and Trubisky, which you can't do, there's some similarities at least to these teams.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And thank you for reminding me. We did. That's a way to help you get down, have our listeners download
just
both podcasts this week.
Baby.
Yeah, we did a good preview of the Bears Saints. So I won't dig too deep into that one on this show. There's enough other ones to get to. Eric, what about? God, I mean, it's the most lopsided matchup of the week, but we at least have to hit on the Eagles quickly. I haven't gotten your thoughts on what Carson Wentz is doing, what Carson Wentz did, and what I thought was his best game as a pro last week.
Yeah, he started out really slowly. Looked like he was struggling through the first quarter, and you thought, wow, you know, maybe Washington was they were showing a little more man coverage early in the game. You know, of course, the first matchup, he had some big plays, also threw a pick six in the week one game against the Redskins. But then he comes back and spreads it around. I mean, four touchdowns to four different receivers. You know, that play where he kind of ducks, it looks like he's going to get sacked, you know, comes out, makes a good play, scramble to the sideline, another play. It's just fun watching him, the confidence he has. Last year, after the good start, he just looked tentative at times, unsure, when do I take a chance, when do I not? He has it dialed up this year, and now, poor 49ers, I mean, you know, they're not as bad as the 0-7 record indicates, but they've got some issues. You know, last week the run defense was bad, so just another tough spot for the Niners having to go on the road.
Yeah, the Niners had kept things close in pretty much every game, despite the first six losses, and then the Cowboys just opened up a can of whoop-ass on them last week. So this is a tough spot to now go cross-country, and as we mentioned, I mean, I think Carson Wentz right now is probably the front-runner for MVP.
Yeah.
The run defense, too, is just playing lights out. They may get Ronald Darby back on the back end.
Good point.
But what do you think about losing both Jason Peters and Jordan Hicks?
I hate it.
Yeah, I mean, it's troubling, and yeah. It's not like any team just has capable left tackles sitting and waiting in the wings, but is this something they can overcome? I mean, Carson Wentz's mobility probably maybe going to factor in a little bit more, but we have to remember how lost Carson Wentz looked Lane Johnson off the field versus on the field as a rookie on the other edge.
Right. Lane Johnson missed, what, 10 games with that suspension last year, and just wasn't the same. And yeah, I mean, they put Vitae in. I'm glad they put him in at left tackle. Didn't want to change two positions to fix one. Johnson stayed at right. We'll see what the long-term plan is, you know, what they end up doing. But they have options there. Vitae played a lot of right tackle earlier. So, yeah, that's a tough one because you think about what Jason Peters meant to that team. You know, college tight end ends up being undrafted, ends up being an all-pro at left tackle. Yep. And Jordan Hicks was really emerging. I mean, that was – he's a nice player. He's one that they really like a lot. So, you know, that was a big concern. I guess if Darby comes back and the coverage stays strong and you feel good about the leadership in the locker room, maybe it's not the biggest loss in the world.
Yeah. Well, they're glad they didn't trade Michael Kendricks now, aren't they?
Kendricks helps.
He's floated in the offseason, I believe. The past couple offseasons, he's been a rumored trade target. They ended up holding on to him, and they're going to need him. And, of course, Nigel Bradham now, and more than ever, they're going to need that just devastating front to help make life easier on the linebackers.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Bradham's played some really good football the last few weeks. That game against the Panthers a couple weeks ago was incredible. Made more plays. They had a great blitz was it Sunday night they played or Monday night? Monday night, yeah. So, yeah, it was just – it's been special to watch him kind of break out.
So maybe these injuries – I don't know. You tell me, do the injuries open the door? It looked like the Eagles were poised to run away with the division, and now I wonder. The Cowboys obviously have a bit of a cathartic victory. Might be the second to last one before losing Zeke. Who knows with that?
Yep.
Now they go into Washington. What do you think, though? In Washington, Washington and the Cowboys both at 3-3, so I think one of these teams is going to be in big trouble, we can say, whichever the loser is probably from this one.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I mean, the Cowboys' schedule, it's usually when you look at the strength of the schedule, you often see, division teams kind of lumped together. Cowboys have one of the tougher schedules remaining.
Yep.
Eagles have one of the easiest schedules remaining. So that's yet another obstacle that they have to overcome. So you're right. I think of Washington and Dallas, and especially Washington, I would say they're a little bit more desperate at this point, given all the injuries they're facing and just, I think, some uncertainty right there.
Is the AFC West suddenly uncertain now? We hit on the Raiders. Yeah. The Broncos just got shut out for the first time in, 25 years or something like that. Chiefs look like they have issues in the secondary. So this sets up as an interesting one on Monday night with Denver heading into Arrowhead.
And one quick side note, I didn't get to make the point earlier. It's crazy to think that if Younghoe Koo makes that kick, they're 4-3. All of a sudden, we're talking about them being in the mix. So just that one game is just really a huge difference. So, yeah, I think there's... I suspect the Chiefs are going to be fine. I think they can win this game. They blasted them in Kansas City last year. That was a Dontari Poe touchdown pass game, I think.
And just, rub it in.
Oh, I mean, they smashed them out there. So, Shane Ray's back. That's great. He can't play quarterback, though, and they have an issue there. That's my biggest thing. Are you of the belief that Simeon's on a leash? Do they just try to run it more? I mean, what's the solution there?
Well, probably both. I mean, they certainly need to get back to C.J. Anderson. I can't wait to see how Jamal Charles looks in his homecoming. But at the same time, it was your way we hear it piece last month.
Yeah.
Kind of reading in between the lines of what Vance Joseph said about if maybe we see Paxton Lynch again this season.
Yeah.
Simeon has stunk. He admitted as much the past couple weeks. And I'm not, this isn't happening this week or anything, but Lynch, I believe, getting healthier behind the scenes.
Yep.
It's not going to be Chad Kelly. It's between these two. What do you think? I mean, what can Simeon show or not show that's going to change things here?
Yeah, I'll have to look at the schedule here and see what they've got coming up. But, yeah, I think at some point Lynch may get a shot. Now, Simeon may be better. I mean, he may, find some opportunities. The Chiefs secondary, they're making changes. Obviously, they haven't. I don't know what's wrong with
him. He had one big game against the Chiefs last year, a 3-touchdown, 300-yarder, and then a stinker in Arrowhead.
Yep,
so
absolutely.
It's fascinating. Simeon has obviously already exceeded anyone's wildest expectations, and I think he has some mental toughness to him, so we'll see. He's obviously a sharp guy, too. We'll see how he bounces back.
This schedule that Denver has, I just pulled it up here, they've got Chiefs this weekend, at Eagles next weekend, two toughies, Patriots at home, big Sunday night game there as well.
Yeah.
Then Bengals, Raiders, Dolphins, Jets, Colts. Maybe Washington's out of the race at that point. So somewhere in that stretch, if Lynch is healthy and Simeon doesn't get better, maybe that in that area is where we see a change.
All right, yeah. So it could be turbulent for a couple more weeks here, it sounds like. And Eric, let me just ask you. It's always fun to kind of imagine fantasy trades. I came up with one on Twitter the other day. The Chiefs clearly need help outside of Marcus Peters, opposite Marcus Peters.
I thought you meant fantasy football. You mean right?
Yeah, I mean the trade. Deadline's a week away.
Right.
The Chiefs have made some aggressive moves, both for Pat Mahomes and people forget they traded up for Kareem Hunt in April.
Yep.
Do they maybe enlist cornerback help? One name to possibly think about, former personnel guy in Kansas City, Chris Ballard, has Vontae Davis near the end of his contract year. The Colts are going nowhere fast. I know that's a little specific, but could you see the Chiefs potentially kicking the tires on? Is that the need? Would that be the spot, cornerback?
I can't help but click on those stories like, here are 10 trades that should happen. I click on them, and 9 of the 10, I'm like, nah, that's one of the best suggestions I've seen because you've got a press man corner in a defense that wants to play that
yep.
way. And Vontae, I think, would make a lot of sense. You know, he would be a Bob Sutton corner. So that's not bad right there.
We know the phone lines are open, obviously, between Ballard and Andy Reid. And we know that I have thrown crazier things at the wall that have actually stuck, like Dontrell Inman going to the Bears, which
you
I predicted
him?
August 31st
Get
on Twitter.
Out of here.
I look
it.
On Twitter. I retweeted it yesterday,
it.
And now my arm
right
is
now.
Sore from patting my back so
I'm
much. So if I go 2 for 2, I'm going to get out my I'm gonna get my resume
That's
polished
brilliant.
Up and start sending it to NFL teams. So
the Browns need help, Arthur. Have you heard that? I don't know.
I'm afraid to even go there, but yeah, we're not going to go there. The Browns go to London, and I've said they could leave Hugh Jackson there in the same vein as Joe Philbin and a few other guys
They're
that have been left
place
behind.
To be left. Everyone says, oh, they could leave him in London. Like, I would love to be left in London. Like, oh, I can't get back, honey. I'm sorry. You're going to have to take care of the kids. I'm just going to hang out in central London and go to a few clubs, you know?
Yeah. Gosh, let's just do it for 1 second, because I still like DeShone Kizer, and I just wonder if any rookie quarterback can succeed when they're getting thrown in and out of the lineup on a weekly or even in-game quarterly basis. Are they going to screw this kid up? Is Hugh Jackson going to, or can this be salvaged? I mean, what do you think about that quarterback circus they got going?
And, you know, what was the story about Kizer coming out of Notre Dame that his confidence was shot after having less than full support from his staff, whether it was Brian Kelly, whether it was the other offensive coaches there? The story that I heard, and one of my Notre Dame sources, was that he was hearing one thing from the QB coach in college, one thing from the offensive coordinator, and another thing entirely from the head coach. So he was getting three different mixed messages. Well, boy, doesn't that sound like what's going on in Cleveland? You've got a front office and a coaching staff that's out of whack. You've got an owner who hasn't said anything publicly in a long time. You know, you have a defensive coordinator saying, hey, you guys never should have signed Kenny Britt. I warned you about him, or at least saying it behind the scenes. So, I mean, it's just an absolute mess. And, oh, by the way, Kizer's now been benched twice after he was thrust in the lineup too soon. I mean, you know, and for different guys both times, too. There doesn't seem to be any plan. There doesn't seem to be any focus. And they potentially could wreck his confidence. At this point, if you don't think he's the future, trade him. Get him an opportunity, clear the decks, and go in a different direction.
And, oh, by the way, it's the 5-2 Minnesota Vikings with Everson Griffin lining up across We believe it's going to be Spencer Drago is likely to get his first start in Joe Thomas's place, I believe. So on the left side, that's who filled in last week anyway. Everson Griffin is as hot as any pass rusher in the NFL. So if Kizer's confidence isn't shook already, let's give it about 48, 72 hours and see where he's at. That's all I have to say on that one. We got a couple minutes left here, Eric. I'm excited to get to see Deshaun Watson play again. I felt like I had Deshaun withdrawal when they were on bye last week.
Yeah.
They go to Seattle, though. This is a very different type of test for one of the Rookie of the Year front runners. What do you think about Watson going to face the 12s and that defense that now has Dwight Freeney? What a fun signing that is.
Very cool. Yeah, no, that was one that when it popped up, you just thought, what a great opportunity for him, especially a year after, you know, playing so well in the Super Bowl and then not really getting much of a sniff anywhere. So obviously the odds seem a little if you just look at history, and some of these stats are a little bit ridiculous. But, you know, rookies against Pete Carroll up in Seattle, terrible record. Rookies going up against the number one scoring defense in the NFL, terrible record. So, I mean, there just hasn't been a lot of cases of that being successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could say the Texans are the highest scoring team. They've scored a ton of points. Some of those have come off their defense, which is obviously not the same unit. So, couple weeks ago, this looked like an incredible matchup, just with Watt and Merciless. Those guys are now hurt, but yeah, Watson against this defense, you can't ask for much better in terms of quarterback versus unit up in that environment. I can't wait to see it.
It's going to be a fun one, and we should mention, I'm not predicting any upsets or anything, but they didn't quite pull off the upset in Foxborough, but remember what the numbers look like for rookie quarterbacks going into New England to face Bill Belichick's defense. And although the Texans didn't come away with a win, Deshaun Watson was pretty much incredible in that game, going back and forth with Tom Brady. So let's stick with Seattle for just 1 minute. The scoreboard maybe didn't indicate how close that one was out in New York last week. I think it got away from the Giants there late. Turned into a 24-7 Seahawks win, but are we just going to talk, is it going to be a broken record all season with the offensive line and the run game, or do you think Seattle kind of reinvents itself? Just any thoughts on kind of where that club is at now, actually trailing the Rams in the NFC West, but they do hold the tiebreaker, right?
Yeah, the head-to-head win looms pretty big, I think, and so, yeah, I mean, obviously Seattle has kind of gone from the first couple weeks of the season, what's going on with them, they've kind of become on the back burner. That win in L.A. was a big one, so yeah, we'll see. I mean, does Eddie Lacy get more of a role? I know he got some opportunities, but yeah, the offensive line is still a concern. It's a different one. They have to keep figuring out who's the best left tackle and who's, you know, and then set the table after that. So I don't know. It's I wanted to like this team a little bit more than what they've shown so far, I guess.
I wanted to like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think we're going to close with this today here, Eric. And the segue I have is just thinking if there was a team that maybe needed Dwight Freeney a little bit more than Seattle, maybe Tampa Bay, the NFL's worst pass rush. But they're struggling a little bit now. They got embarrassed in Arizona 2 weeks ago. They couldn't win in a shootout in Buffalo, although quite an effort from a banged-up Jameis Winston there. What about Tampa Bay? One of those sexy preseason playoff picks now suddenly at 2-4 and in jeopardy of really falling out of this thing by, you know, week 10.
And they don't get a bye. I mean, they've already had a bye. And
so are they already out of it?
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's the biggest thing. And you know, they've got, I think, road games in four of their next six and a tough divisional game this week, tough divisional game at New Orleans the week after that. And so, yeah, I you know, they lose Noah Spence, surgery done for the year,
tough.
Shoulder, so it looks like I think he's done for the year.
Yes, he is.
So, yeah, I mean, outside of that big Bears win and a comeback against the winless Giants, they don't have much to hang their hat on so far. So it's been a frustrating season. I know they feel like they should be farther along at this point. Yeah, especially with some contributions from the rookies, too. You felt like, okay, this class is helping out, but they haven't been able to take that next step.
Mike Smith was one of those highly, rumored retread head coach candidates last year, and now his defense is just a bit of a disaster.
That's
so, and I said we weren't really going to talk about Cam off air, but we should talk about the other side of this matchup. The Panthers, after squandering they let up five first downs at Soldier Field last week and lost.
Crazy.
That was a franchise record. And Cam Newton walked out on another press conference this week. Last time he was under fire was, of course, after the Jordan, you know, after the sexist remarks of the Charlotte Observer reporter, and he came out and lit up, I think it was Detroit, whoever it was. Do you expect another big performance from Cam, or is it just he's too inconsistent to really even have any idea at this point?
What are Cam's stats the week after he has a media issue? We have to get the fancy football.
It's going to take a while to pull those up.
Yeah, I know. There's been several games. Yeah, it's funny how it's almost like he's sort of made we the media the enemies, and he goes out there and balls out. So maybe that's the formula, Cam. I don't know if it works. Good for you. I mean, that God bless you. I guess the matchup is pretty favorable in the sense like the Bucks aren't in a good spot right now. But yeah, I don't know. I thought the question too was pretty harmless
for the second time in a row. Yeah, it was about the downfield passing game. I think Joe Person of Charlotte Observer, I believe.
Yeah, I think it was Joe. Yeah,
and
if it's not, he's fine with us just saying it was.
And of course, Jordan's. I liked her question about Devin Funchess's routes.
It was a layup.
Exactly. It was an opportunity
to
pump up his hot wide receiver, and Cam wasn't down with it. So,
yeah. You know, look. I don't expect these guys to bow down to us and sit there for 25 minutes every week and ask, you know, and there are plenty of dumb questions that get asked at these things. That I'm the first one to say that. I roll my eyes at some of the questions our fellow media brethren and sisters ask, and just.
And we've all asked them. We all have been there, right?
I've asked plenty of dumb questions. Yes. I'm sure people have rolled their eyes at me. I just don't understand. Like, was Cam that annoyed? Was it, I think it was 8.5 minutes into his press conference? Not.
Right.
You know, I don't know, man.
If you guys could see us tape this podcast here, Eric's been rolling his eyes at every question I've asked for the past 25 minutes. I'm sorry, guys, but I was at Soldier Field last week. I was in the visitors' interview room waiting 80 minutes for Cam Newton. And I was in the locker room. Well, yeah, I think this was even a little longer than usual. I was in the locker room watching him just lounging on the trainer's table. He wasn't being tended to. So I got, you know, a couple people lit me up on Twitter. Oh, he needs to take as long as he needs to get his treatment. And I get that and everything. But he was just sitting there, and I just, I don't know. And then he comes in and says nothing.
I know. We need to talk to the Panthers, their pilot, to find out how long he keeps them, like, on the runway. You know, like, how long does Cam hold you guys up? Let's get the real story on this thing.
That's a fun story. Yeah. All right, guys, we are out of time on this week's Pro Football Weekly podcast. Thank you once again to Dan Mott, our producer, and thank you to our sponsor, Loot Crate. Please head to iTunes. One more reminder, and make sure you're subscribed to the PFW podcast so you never miss an episode. For Eric, I am Arthur. Enjoy the Week 8 slate. We will talk to you next week.